ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Medialand, your new weekly look at what's happening behind the scenes on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows. I'm a digital journalist, media watcher, and founder of the media newsletters Mumbrella and Unmade.
And I'm Vivian Kelly, a journalist, media commentator, and comms expert.
Every week, Viv and I will be breaking down the big stories in the media so you understand the decisions behind what you're seeing and hearing.
Between us, we've been in newsrooms for decades, covering everything from media scandals and meltdowns, sometimes as colleagues and sometimes as competitors. And now each week, we're back together again to open up the often closed world of media and look at what it means for you and society at large. And Tim, feels like quite a week to get the band back together.
Oh, what a week, Viv. A US TikTok ban and unban. A little bit of a social media exodus as a result. Politicians and billionaires seizing the means of mass communication, perhaps a little less shamelessly than before. We'll break down what it all might mean for Australia.
And Prince Harry has scored a big win against News Corp.
Now, first, I do feel like we might just be saying this a lot in the coming weeks and months, Viva. There's been a bit of drama at Nine.
Look, depending on how the year plays out, Tim, do you think we need to make that the tagline of our show?
The thing is, there are many other people out there who have the capacity to cause trouble as well, I think. This week, Today Sports presenter Alex Cullen got himself in a bit of trouble. Well, actually a lot of trouble for trying to pick up an extra 50K paycheck.
Adrian Portelli, a.k.a. the McLaren guy, likely to make an appearance
Lambo
here today
guy,
as well.
Alex. But look, it's a different luxury car.
Yeah. No, I think it's pretty sure it's McLaren guy.
Yeah, no, it's definitely McLaren.
He's probably got both of them.
We can split the 50 grand.
Yeah.
Oh, those laughs, man.
So if you weren't laughing along with that, one, it might be because it simply wasn't very funny, but two, it might be because you've got no idea who Lambo guy, McLaren man is. But that was the Today Show on Channel 9 and Alex Cullen bantering about an identity down in Melbourne called Adrian Portelli. Now, Tim, last week before this all kicked off, if I'd come up to you and said, guess what Lambo guy did? Would you know what I was talking about?
Probably not. Like, he might have just crossed my radar a little bit from the attention-seeking activity of generally buying all the houses in the finale of The Block. But that would be about it. And I'm not sure I would have got it through the nickname.
Well, Lambo guy came from The Block. He sort of came to prominence to mainstream television viewers as this wealthy man who rolled up to auctions at The Block in a Lamborghini and would bid on all these houses. So people who didn't know him, didn't know his business activities, referred to him as Lambo guy. Adrian Portelli then sort of got a bit annoyed and felt that was disrespectful because he's actually a McLaren man. And he issued a challenge to TV journalists to show him the respect that he believes he deserves and posted to social media that he will give $50,000 to the first television journalist who called him his preferred nickname. It seems that Alex Cullen took up that challenge, as we heard in that grab before, got 50K, lost a job.
Well, as most of you are well aware, our colleague Alex Cullen has not been on air with us this past week. There has been widespread reporting on the circumstances surrounding this. What I can say is that last night, Alex and Nine agreed that he would finish with the network.
That's an expensive 50K in the end, and I don't know whether Alex even got to keep the money before he lost his job, Tim.
Given that he now has lost the job, you would hope for his sake that perhaps he hadn't given it back. And I guess if we sort of think about what went wrong and what made it controversial, it wasn't so much that kind of slightly weird on-air moment. It was the fact that he then went ahead afterwards and handed over his bank details to be sent the $50,000.
Yeah, look, the Today Show is no stranger to slightly weird on-air moments. If you've got to be on air for 3 hours a day at that time of the morning, you're bound to have some awkward banter. But this went beyond that because you're right, Tim. How did Adrian Portelli, the Melbourne business identity, know how to get the $50,000 to Alex Cullen? Why did he have his bank account details on file? It says to me that Alex Cullen contacted him, gave him the bank details, the 50K was transferred because that screenshot of that bank transfer ended up on social media. So then it becomes a question of, well, what are the ethics of this? Because they didn't exactly declare or quickly say, we're going to give this money to charity. This is all just a joke. You might not be aware that $50,000 has changed hands.
So Karl Stefanovic's role in it was actually he was doing his job for the audience of giving them the context they were missing by joining in the banter about the 50,000 and kind of telling them what that weird Lambo thing was about.
I'm not sure that the casual observer would have understood the complexity of this story by that brief banter. I don't think they would have understood that Alex Cullen had potentially been bought with a 50K donation or prize, however one wants to frame it. I mean, if we make a joke here about somebody's name and took $50,000, I'm pretty sure this would be our first and only media land on ABC Radio National. There has to be some kind of parameter of transparency.
Well, I do at this stage have something of a confession, which is I was once a guest, a non-paid guest, on a segment on Seven. I think it was the morning show. And the night before, I was chatting to a friend in the media. And for some reason, we ended up with a bet whether I could get the word unconscionable into the cross the next day. And the bet was that there was a meal at a nice restaurant in Sydney. And I won the bet. So what sort of trouble could I have been in all those years ago?
Well, I mean, Journos do love to try and spice up their lives sometimes by putting...
And that's the most I'll ever spice my life up.
Yeah, unconscionable. Wow, Tim, calm down. By putting in certain phrases, or sometimes they work in a song lyric to quite a serious news report just to give themselves, their friends, their colleagues, astute observers a giggle. I think that's quite different to potentially giving someone favourable coverage because of a $50,000 paycheck. And it's not just favourable coverage. Adrian Portelli clearly has an idea that the media don't respect him enough, and he is using his position and his money to try and leverage that respect. A lot of people feel like they're not respected by the media. They don't have 50K to throw at it, to bend them to their will, to make them use a certain name.
And I suppose the thing that Nine will lean into on the legal side of things is there are rules from the ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, for TV and for radio about declaring third-party commercial deals. And Nine owns the radio networks 2GB and 2UE and has had trouble about that in the past, undeclared deals. So I think that was one of the issues that made it sensitive. But on your point on Portelli using his power, he uses that social platform not just for nice things, really. The sort of knock-on effect was what happened to Fiona Byrne.
Yeah, Fiona is a News Corp journalist who reported on this 50K prize and did, in the headline, refer to him as Lambo Guy. Again, he took issue with that, saying it was about respect and wanting people to use his real name. I mean, the headline used his real name. His real name is Adrian Portelli. But he basically told his hundreds of thousands of social media followers that Fiona needed to be respectful or he'll come up with a nickname for her and blast it all over his socials, and challenged his followers to go and leave comments on her social media saying, if journos want to bully, let's bully back. So again, it really does feel like this story is about power dynamics and how both the media and billionaires, quote unquote, use their power to bend the media to their will.
I have a bit of a feeling this is going to be a theme we're talking about for the rest of this year. Now, a bit closer to home, lots of changes for the ABC in the first weeks of the year. So what a delight to be talking about that topic in our very first episode. This week, Chief Content Officer Chris Oliver-Taylor announced his departure from the ABC after less than 2 years in the role. And Viv, it always feels to me like when it's a big role and someone leaves within 2 years, then something maybe didn't quite work out. Now, in fairness, it was a huge role. It covered TV, it covered radio, it covered digital content, all in one department. That has since changed with the audio part of the business being brought away from his management. So I suppose he wasn't our boss.
Well, he's not our boss anymore, that's for sure. And in an email to his team, which we've seen, he said, "My role as chief content officer has changed so much since I started, and the ABC has changed. It's not the role that I originally signed up for, and I now want to go and do something else." Tim, I remember when I was reporting on various media departures in years gone by, I noticed this real trend in statements where they sort of did a three-pronged approach. There was a feeling followed by a fact followed by a reference to the future. I think this kind of follows that script. The feeling is my role has changed so much and the ABC has changed. It is a fact that the role is not what he originally signed up for and the future is pretty vague. I now want to go and do something else.
And of course, when you put it on LinkedIn, remember to start it with a bit of personal news from me. In terms of sort of looking back at the 2 years, one of those defining things will be the very, very short time that Antoinette Latouf spent on air for ABC Sydney, which came to a very messy end, which we're going to see translated and discussed in court in the coming days. Chris Oliver Taylor is likely to be one of those witnesses, amongst various other members of senior management. Is it starting to draw a line, though, do you think?
Under that era of the ABC? I don't think so. There has been a lot of executive change. The ABC has a new managing director in Kim Williams. They've got a new chairman. See, this is what I mean. There's so much change. I work here and I can't even get
it right. But there is a new managing director
as well. There is a new managing director in Hugh Marks, the former leader of Nine, which we've spoken about just before. And now you've got the chief content officer going. A chief content officer is quite a commercial network way of doing things. And I think one of the criticisms that the ABC is facing from some people internally is that they're doing a lot of commercial media type appointments with Hugh Marks, who's led Nine, with Kim Williams, who's been very high up at News Corp. With these appointments, Chris Oliver Taylor was from Netflix previously. So people have questions about, well, what's going on? Are we trying to commercialise the ABC? And then the flip side of that argument is, well, we're just trying to make content that resonates, content that works, and allegedly that these commercial media executives can get it done.
I mean, the criticism of appointing commercial people is they're all about chasing audience. But the challenge for the ABC is it has been losing audience on certainly on all of the traditional platforms. And it's really hard to justify all of those public dollars if you haven't actually got an audience, if you're not connecting with Australians. So the point of hiring people who have experience in talking to ordinary Australians is to find new ways of reaching those audiences.
And look, Chris Oliver Taylor has had a lot of success in his previous roles. He was obviously at the ABC at a challenging time. There's a lot of management changes. And as you say, he's caught up in this decision about Antoinette Latouf's employment that she has continued to challenge for the fact that she was terminated as part of her 5-day fill-in radio contract over some reporting she did on her social media where she reposted a video about the Palestinian cause. And it's just snowballed into this thing that's so much bigger than a 5-day media contract. It's about what people can say on social media. It's become about whether it was appropriate cause and reaction. It's going to play out so publicly. And it did feel like whoever was behind that decision was going to face some consequences because Antoinette is not rolling over. She's not walking away. And anyone who was involved in that is going to be under a lot of scrutiny.
Hey, look, we'll find out a lot of the detail of that. I think more changes to come, I'm certain, on the management side of things once David Anderson finishes and Hugh Marks starts. You know, I don't know about you, Viv, but I haven't even learned how to get on the Wi-Fi yet. And it seems like the management have changed 3 times. So I think I think we'll see some more yet.
We've got all year to try and hash that one out.
And I'm looking forward to that. You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National with Tim Burrows and Vivian Kelly. Viv, what a weird week for social media.
It's always a weird week for social media, but I think this one was particularly strange. TikTok was banned in the US for a handful of hours, as it turned out, and then it was back. And depending on who you listen to, that was thanks to President Donald Trump. The revived US version of TikTok, though, after this almighty interference by Donald Trump, is reported now to be censoring anti-Trump speech and pushing up pro-Trump videos.
It does seem to follow this strange few developments over the last few days of the various US tech billionaires much more publicly than previously getting in line with the new president, Donald Trump's agenda. We saw, I don't even know what to call it, and it's probably a rabbit hole we don't want to get into, the owner of X/Twitter, Elon Musk, and his strange salute. Meta's announcement of the dropping of fact checkers to allow for free speech. And I hope you can see my quote marks around that. It just all feels to me like this really overt taking of sides in a way that maybe we got used to happening with the newspapers, but never really happened with the platforms before.
Well, not so obviously. I mean, newspapers have had headlines here in Australia. The Daily Telegraph, I think, had one about how we need Tony, as in former Prime Minister Tony Abbott. The platforms are in people's pockets, though. And as you say, Tim, they're being very overt.
They are. Well, look, I think it'll be helpful to try and understand this through a bit of an Australian context as well. So the ideal person to help us with that is Dr. Susan Grantham, lecturer in communication at Griffith University. Susan, welcome to Medialand.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Now, when we think about TikTok, where do we even start? Because, of course, the ban came down the track for a while, but like some sort of season finale of a show, it all happened in the days before the inauguration.
Yeah, it was really oddly timed, you know, and we expected it to be a strange experience. I think because nobody knew exactly how the ban was coming into effect, everybody was a bit worried. What does it mean? Are we still going to be able to access TikTok? And then, of course, when it flicked over at midnight on the 19th, we suddenly saw all of that US audience disappear, which was quite an odd experience. But then, you know, as we saw, the TikTok CEO put up that very odd video that made it quite clear that he was either in correspondence with President Trump or he was strong-arming President Trump into saving them. What we're seeing, and we saw this also with the inauguration and all of the tech bros, as I call them, being present at that inauguration, there's a level of power that is being connected to this, that they feel they need to be intertwined with the politics to actually have have an ability to remain present and remain relevant, which is a very odd connection between technology and politics that we definitely have not seen before.
And something I suppose we saw certainly in the build-up to the election was Elon Musk throw his own financial support, but also technological influence between changing the outcome. Now, what does that mean for the Australian election when it comes?
Yeah, our Australian election was going to be quite an interesting one to watch. If we are an X user, we're seeing that very strong Musk-Trump rhetoric being pushed out to all users. We are seeing a little bit of that starting to happen on TikTok, less so in Australia, more so in America. In Australia, one thing I have noticed on TikTok is this removal of political content. I've played with my algorithm a lot as a political scholar. I normally get a lot of the politics, and I'm actually not seeing a huge amount of that at the moment, which suggests that the algorithm has been adjusted, which could be problematic as we move forward into our campaigning period for our federal election.
Susan, it feels like quite a time for billionaires and the media. We also saw in the US that Australian billionaires, including mining magnate Gina Rinehart, taking out ads in the traditional newspapers, congratulating Donald Trump and trying to very much make it clear that they are on his side. Why are billionaires suddenly doing this? Or have they always been doing it and we're just noticing it more? Does Gina Rinehart need an ad in an American paper?
No, she doesn't. and you know, this stuff's been happening for a very long time. But we are seeing more of this overt display of power with these very, very rich individuals. I think she just wants a piece of the pie, really. We're seeing the American billionaires getting their seat at the table. I'm not surprised that she wants a seat at that table too.
And what will it mean then for news publishing here in Australia? Do you think we'll see more overt billionaire takes in the pages of our papers?
Yeah, it's going to be a space to watch. I mean, you never quite know which way it's going to go. We've already seen a decline in some traditional news. Obviously just yesterday we saw Darwin shut down its local news, Channel 9. And so we are seeing more of an influence in this global perspective, which could then have that flow-on effect, and we could see more of this, powerful individuals coming in to attempt to save things.
Something we saw this week was some reporting that the so-called teals, the independents, are going to argue for what they're describing as truth in advertising laws. In other words, the same sort of rules that cover other types of advertising, that you can't lie in political advertising. If it happens, would it make a difference?
Oh, it's, probably not. The problem with advertising, and particularly when we start bringing in this social media space, is that things can happen in that space that aren't actually covered by those laws and by those rules. So we see offshoot accounts, and we saw it in Queensland actually with the Miles HQ account, which technically was aligned to the Labor Party but actually sat separately. So they weren't put under the same rules as the normal campaigning sites. And if we have an everyday Australian set up a site that pushes particular political messages, they're not going to be covered by these things.
I guess the challenge as well, Susan, is when it comes to truth in political advertising, the people who would have to make those laws and enact those changes across the advertising and media landscape are the politicians themselves. So why would they be compelled to change a law which would, one, force them to tell the truth, and two, might anger the media, which they need to get their messages out there, truthful or otherwise?
Yeah, look, that's an absolutely perfect point. If this does come in, the way it will be worded will be very carefully done, and done in a way that it can be quite easily manipulated. So is there really a point of doing it? Yes, there is. But is it going to be upheld? Possibly not.
And do you think this election, is it going to be decided in social media? There's been lots of talk about podcasts. Is it going to be traditional media? Where will it actually be won and lost, do you think?
There are so many elements to this. Social media, we're seeing a big uptake on the individuals setting up their own accounts and really displaying political authenticity or displayed political authenticity. That is definitely assisting. We saw that assist here in Queensland. We did see it assist in America. But is it actually going to push people over the line? I'm not sure. We seem to be more gravitating towards the authentic individuals as opposed to those that actually just run with trends or want to try and push their agenda. So it's definitely an interesting place to be, and to be, well, for me, working in this and researching this.
With all the stories that have been unfolding on social media over the past few weeks, whether it is the Meta CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, getting rid of fact checkers, or Elon Musk on stage at Donald Trump events, or this TikTok ban, unban, we always see people saying, I'm leaving this platform, like, this is my line in the sand. I've had enough and I'm going. Now, aside from the frustrations that some people feel when they see their friend announcing on social media that they're leaving social media only to return 2 days later, do you think this will actually be a moment in time for people to leave social media for good or start switching platforms at least?
Yeah, we've already seen it on X and a shift to Blue Sky. The biggest issue with that, though, is that if you shift platforms, you don't take your followers with you. So you need to start from scratch, and you need to make it very clear that you are on that platform and where people can find you. The other concern that I have is, like, in the TikTok space, if you're in America, you're monetizing this, you're earning from it. So the likelihood of you shifting platforms where you will no longer earn money is going to be quite slim. So, you know, you've got all of these complexities that come into effect with some of these platforms. X was easy. X was easy. We were able to leave. We went to Blue Sky. Blue Sky was created by one of the Twitter founders. So it looked and feel like what we were used to. But moving away from TikTok or moving away from Instagram is going to be a lot more difficult for people.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can face being on even one more new platform. Susan Grantham, lecturer in communication at Griffith University, thank you so much for joining us on Media Land.
Thanks again for having me.
Right, just before we wrap up, Viv, any other business?
Do you think we have time for a quick chat about Prince Harry?
Let's have a chat about Prince Harry.
Well, look, he's finally settled his 5-year legal battle with The Sun. And if you feel like this has been going on for a long time, it's because it has been going on for a long time. This is about activities that The Sun and its journalists and its private investigators conducted between 1996 and 2011. So it feels significant that in 2025, it might finally be wrapping up.
And Viv, I have a job interview. I'm just having a flashback on The Sun in about 2000. So I'm kind of glad I didn't get the job.
Well, would you have engaged in these unlawful activities, Tim? I mean, they issued a full and unequivocal apology to Prince Harry for phone hacking, surveillance, and misuse of private information, and also for unlawful activities carried out by private investigators. So I'm guessing you were going to be a journo, not a private investigator.
I was going to be writing about health at the time, but I guess one of the points to make about the comments from News this week as part of the settlement is, whereas the News of the World, the Sunday tabloid, it became very clear that journalists had engaged in illegally accessing voicemails. One of the pieces of ground which hasn't been given and now won't be tested because it was settled out of court is what actually went on in terms of the behaviour of journalists. The acceptance has been of illegality by private investigators or similar on behalf of the organisation. Now, that might feel like semantics, but it's something which they've been very clear about in that statement.
I think it's also worth noting that Prince Harry obviously courts a lot of attention for this, but he's not the only one. 39 other people settled claims about this same activity and this same conduct between July and December last year. So he's certainly not the only one who took an issue with it, nor the only one who pursued it. We know that Harry got £10 million in damages. So I'm not sure how much it's going to cost them in the end with all these other people. But do you think that's the line in the sand now, Tim? £10 million to Prince Harry, we're sorry, everybody can move on?
Hey, look, on the civil side, it's looking that way. I think he was the last one standing. And of course, these date back so far that it's going to be quite hard to get anything else to court. It now depends, certainly in the UK, whether the police or politicians are interested in pursuing anything. And I rather suspect they won't be. I suspect this is the end of the scandal.
Well, I'll believe that when I see it, Tim.
We shall see. That is all for now from Media Land. Remember to follow us on the ABC Listen app so you never miss an episode.
And we'd love to hear from you, especially if you have the goss on what's going on in the media. Email us at medialand@abc.net.au.
We will be back in your feeds and on air next week.
See you then, Tim.
Toodlepip, Viv.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.